They reached the river, still barely ahead of Jericho's men. Andy held tightly to Tony as the horse began thrashing, plunging through the water. This was not an ideal place to cross. The river had narrowed, but narrowing made it deeper. The pursuers' aim was spoiled by the motion of their swimming horses. Andy and the others broke out on the south bank and resumed running, but Andy's hopes began to sink as he saw that they were going to lose the race. Jericho's riders had gradually maneuvered around to the front, 50 yards ahead. Andy slid off his horse. He then reached up to help Tony down.
Get behind the horse, Tony. Drop down low where they can't see you through the brush.
They don't have to see us to hit us.
We don't have to make it easy for them.
Andy raised up, trying to see a target. He saw a man moving around to the left.
Trying to flank us.
Tony tried to aim. Andy took the pistol from his hand.
You can't hold steady enough to hit the side of a barn. Don't be wasting shells. We'll need all we've got.
Andy aimed at the flanker. He saw the man drop, then rise again and go hopping back toward the others.
Aim high, Badger boy! His leg is too far from his heart!
Farley aimed his rifle.
Good shooting, Farley!
I got a lot of practice back in the days of the state police. They learned to keep the distance.
For a while, Jericho's men seemed confused and uncertain, unnerved by Farley's accurate shot. Every so often, they'd send a bullet whispering harmlessly in the general direction of the fugitives, who for the most part kept low. Farley raised up a little, as if inviting a bullet.
Look yonder, up the river.
Andy had been concentrating his attention on their adversaries and had not paid attention to what was going on to the west. He saw at least a dozen horsemen loping alongside the river toward them.
Tony, some of your friends?
That old curandero must have told Tio Lupe that I'd be coming.
But I'm thinking he told Jericho, too. That's why they were waiting for you as soon as you left the house. Looks like he lit the candle from both ends.
Jericho's men exchanged a few shots with the oncoming riders, then broke and ran for the river. Tony looked up at Hewitt.
You're still a ranger. Tio Lupe had rather shoot a ranger than eat. I don't know if I'd be able to stop him.
Hewitt seemed to be measuring the distance between him and the Mexicans.
I'd best go report to Sergeant Donahue that his prisoner got away. I'll be lucky if he doesn't fire me.
Tell him it was all my fault. He'll believe that.
Hewitt left at a lope, riding eastward to avoid contact with either Jericho's men or the Mexicans. Andy was relieved to see that no one from either group chased after him. He figured Hewitt would cross over at some shallow point.
He's a pretty good sort.
At least he doesn't talk your ears off like Lynn Tanner. If I was ever to be a ranger again, wouldn't mind having Hewitt with me.
The first Mexican horseman reined up. Andy was strongly aware of several pistols aimed at him. He raised his hands to shoulder level and tried not to betray any anxiety. Some people fed on others' fear. He had never seen Guadalupe Chavez, but he thought he had heard enough to recognize him on sight. He would have picked almost any of the others before he would have chosen the one who turned out to be Chavez. To Andy's surprise, he was anything but imposing. He was a small, thin man, not much more than 5 feet tall and weighing perhaps 130. His fierce eyes were so dark that they appeared black. A heavy mustache gave his face a fearsome look that belied his size. He pointed to Jericho's fleeing men.
Get them!
Only then did he kneel to look at his nephew's wound.
You are shot again?
No, but I would have been if these rangers hadn't come after me.
You would take my nephew to the rangers?
No, we intended to take him back to his mother and stepdaddy.
But you are rangers, no?
We used to be. We lost our job.
Not good enough even to be a ranger? Tell me why I should not shoot you.
No, don't. They are friends.
They are not friends of mine. But maybe I don't kill them for a while.
Since Tony is safe now, me and Farley will go back and tell his folks what's happened.
Or maybe go and bring the rinches? I think you may be spies for them. I must think on whether I will shoot you or let you go.
Chavez stared up at Andy and Farley, his eyes unreadable. Though he was shorter than either man, he seemed taller to Andy. He held out his hand.
Your guns, please?
I got a sentimental attachment to my guns. I carried one of them all the way through the war. The other one I took off a state policeman. He'd lost interest in it.
You better give it to him, or he'll take it away from you the same way you got it.
He forked over his own pistol to one of Chavez's lieutenants and nodded toward the rifle on his saddle. Farley then gave up. A couple of Chavez's men helped Tony to his feet. Another led an unfortunate Jericho man's horse to Tony and carefully lifted him into the saddle. Chavez motioned for the Texans to get on their horses. Tony slumped, weakened by the reopening of his wound, though the bleeding had stopped.
Sorry, boys. When Tio Lupe gets his head set on something, it's hard to talk him out of it. But I'll keep working on him.
When Chavez was out of earshot, Andy turned to Farley.
From all the stories I've heard, I thought he'd be a lot bigger. At least as large as Jericho or Jim McCauley. He reminds me of a banty rooster.
A fighting rooster. Santiana was a little man, too. Look at all the hell he managed to cause.
The Chavez riders kept Andy and Farley hemmed up in the middle as they rode westward. It would have been foolhardy to try to run. They had nowhere to go except the river, and they would be cut down before their horses got their bellies wet. Andy tried to rationalize that Tony would soften his uncle's attitude, but he didn't convince himself.
You've gotten us into a fix this time, Badger boy.
Me? I didn't do anything more than you did.
But you're a jinx. Always was. Everything you get into causes me trouble. Wonder I'm not dead.
You could have lit out with Hewitt.
I wish I had. If we were still Rangers, maybe Donahue would bring a rescue party and get us out of this. But as it is, I doubt he'll lift a finger. And it was you that got us fired.
They had come to a sprawling ranch headquarters, a mixture of stone and adobe buildings flanked by an expansive set of corrals, built crudely but effectively of brush. It lay a mile or so south of the river. Smoke rose from several chimneys. Chavez led them to a large stone house built along the same old Spanish lines as the home of Big Jim McCauley. He motioned for them to dismount and signaled one of his men to lead the horses away. He walked to the hand-hewn front door and beckoned the Texans and his nephew inside.
Like a fly into a spider's web.
You better do a lot of listening and damn little talking, Farley.
Two women came to meet them. Both were relatively young, and one was obviously pregnant. Chavez put his arm around her.
An old woman lives here, a corintero. She'll make me well.
I hope she's cleaner than that old man who came to see you at McCauley's.
That old man was no corintero. He was a spy for my uncle. I told him when I would get away. Tio Lupe and his men waited for me at the river, but because of the Jerichos, I could not cross when they expected me. That is why they were late.
They weren't the only ones who knew what you figured on doing. Jericho's crew was laying for you.
The old man was two times a spy. Sometimes for me, and sometimes for the Jericho. He will not spy again.
Andy considered the implication and took no comfort in it. Death meant little to either Chavez or Jericho, so long as it was not theirs. Chavez went to a rustic old wooden cabinet and took out a bottle of some kind. He poured a drink for Tony and one for himself. He didn't offer any to Andy or Farley. Instead, he pointed to a pair of straight chairs.
You will sit. My men watch outside. If you try to go, I will not have to concern myself with you anymore.
Chavez put his nephew's arm around his shoulder and took him down a long hall. The women followed. Farley continued to stand.
He told us to sit.
I don't do something just because some Mexican tells me to.
Might be a good idea this time.
Farley sat. Andy looked about the room. Instinctively, he sought any opening that might offer escape, though he knew he'd be caught and probably shot the moment he stepped outside. The furnishings were generally of fine quality, but showed age and wear. He guessed most went back to Spanish colonial times. The house itself certainly did. It bespoke a more prosperous period, when a don could afford to buy luxuries from Mexico City and even Spain.
Living pretty high for Mexicans.
The old don was a big landowner on both sides of the Rio Grande before the Americans came. I guess he believed in spending his money.
I would, too, if I had any.
Your family still has a right smart of land. Carpetbaggers didn't steal all of it.
It belongs to my mother and my sister, not to me. Now that I think on it, the carpetbaggers did to us Brackets what the Americans did to the Chavez family. But there were people here before the Chavezes. The Spanish did to the Indians what the American did to the Spanish and the Mexicans later. And what your Comanches did to the Apaches and any other Indians that got in their way. The same thing keeps happening over and over again. It's just the people that change.
The trouble you stirred up with the carpetbaggers and the state police was like what Lupe Chavez does to Jericho and the other gringos.
But I never hurt no honest citizens. Chavez don't make much distinction as long as they're gringo.
He still looks on it like a war. Wars always hurt innocent people.
That ain't no reason to sympathize with them.
But I do, sort of. It'd be simpler if I didn't. Then I wouldn't be pulled one way and another over what's right and what's wrong.
An old woman entered the house. She carried a small cotton bag. One of the younger women met her and escorted her down the hall. Handy reason that was the curandera Tony had mentioned. Lupe Chavez returned, a satisfied look on his face.
All is well now. When the old woman speaks, heaven listens.
Wouldn't it be better to have a real doctor look at him?
Donna Maria is a doctor. She has not the papers from the university, but she knows things that are not written in the university's books.
Andy had little doubt that Tony would survive anyhow. He had been well on his way to healing before his fall reopened the wound. With a curandera's attentions, it might just take a little longer.
You doubt, but there is much you gringos do not know.
I spent several years with the Comanches. They had their own version of the curanderos.
You are not Indian.
They tried to make one out of me when I was a child. Came awful close.
There was a time we had to fight the Indians. In the days of my grandfather, they drove many of our people off of their land. But not him. He built this house to be a fort. Never did they break in. Neither with the Jericho. Neither with the Orinches.
They tell me Jericho's house is a lot like this one.
Because my grandfather's built it to stand against the Indians. But it could not stand against the lawyers and the Yankee land grabbers. They fight with paper, not with guns. So many lawyers. So many papers.
Me and Farley, we're not lawyers. There ain't nothing we can do to help you and nothing we can do to hurt you either. I don't see any need in us staying here.
I still do not know if you are spies for the Orinches.
We ain't. Even if we were, there's nothing we could tell that would be of any use to them. They already know where this place is. And they'll pretty soon figure out that Tony is here. But they can't do anything about it. It's illegal for them to cross the border.
Yeah, it was illegal when the McNally came with all his rinches across the river and invaded the Rancho Las Cuevas. He killed many men who were not bandits. He killed them only because they were Mexicanos. Some were of my blood. My very own family.
I wasn't here. Neither was Farley.
But you are Americanos. You shared the blame. Poor Mexico. So far from God, and so near to Texas.
What do you want from us?
It is true that you wanted only to take Antonio back to his mother.
And his stepfather. Big Jim has been awful worried about him.
That man's name is not spoken in this house.
Why? He's your sister's husband, and he raised Tony like he was his own.
But he is not of our blood. The Jericho took our land with lawyers and a gun. The McCauley took it with a wedding. In the end, it was all the same.
You're wrong. Him and your sister love each other.
That I do not believe. What he lost is the land. Our land. I am still thinking about you two. You will stay while I decide what to do.
Porfirio was tall and lanky with dark eyes cold as January. He had two holstered pistols and held a rifle which he politely but firmly pointed toward a small stone outbuilding that had a front door but no windows. He motioned for them to enter.
Pretty dark in here.
Kind of like our future.
Don't give up. I believe Tony will keep talking in our favor.
He's not much more than a kid. You think Chavez will pay any attention to him?
Seems to me like these Mexicans put a lot of store in blood relations.
Especially when you hurt one of them.
Andy's eyes accustomed themselves to the dark interior. He found a goatskin and spread it on the dirt floor, then stretched out on it.
After riding all night and finally getting my stomach full, I'm tired out.
You may be fixing to get a lot longer sleep than you figured on.
Farley found a piece of canvas and made a bed of sorts.
Every time I try to do a good deed for somebody, I find myself in trouble all the way up to my chin.
Andy sat up, wondering if Rancho Chavez was being invaded by Rangers or perhaps Jericho's outfit. He heard no shots, however. Cracks in the stone wall and around the door admitted just enough light that Andy could guess at the sun's position. He went to the door and tried to peer out through the narrow space at its edge.
Can't see a thing.
If it's good news, we'll hear about it eventually. If it's bad, we'll hear sooner.
Porfirio swung the door open. Andy and Farley both blinked, for even at dusk, the light seemed bright after their confinement in near darkness. Porfirio pointed toward the house.
A la casa.
The buggy stood in front. Several vaqueros were gathered around it or were watching the front door. One of Chavez's young women opened the door and motioned for Andy and Farley to enter.
Farley, are you all right?
Teresa and her mother stood in the parlor. Teresa rushed to Farley and threw her arms around him. Farley looked surprised and confused, keeping his arms at his sides for a moment, then raising them to embrace the girl.
Ain't nothing wrong with me. What's all the fuss about?
For the first time, Andy saw Big Jim McCauley over in a corner. He and Lupe Chavez were engaged in a silent staring match.
You boys all right?
We're fine. Been enjoying Mr. Chavez's hospitality. Kind of surprised to see you here.
I'm surprised myself, but we had to come and see what happened to Tony. One of the ranch hands got the news to us on the San Antonio Road. We had no idea we'd find you all here, too.
Mr. Chavez insisted on us staying.
Tony says he wouldn't have made it to the river if you all hadn't come along at just the right time. I'm obliged to you. We all are.
Me and Farley will escort you all home when you're ready to go. You might run into some of the Jericho bunch.
He looked at Chavez, half expecting to be contradicted.
I offer you escort to the river. You'll want to cross before dark. The women are welcome to stay as long as they wish.
We'll all go together when my wife and daughter say so.
Naturally, they will wish to stay with Antonio a while. I do not like you, gringo, but you are safe under my roof.
I've got a bedroll. I'll sleep outside and not contaminate your house.
You stole our land by marrying my sister, so you will do the proper thing. You will sleep in a bed with the woman you married. She is your property now, just like our land.
She's not property. Can't you get it through your wooden head that I married her, not your land?
Would you two stop fighting? I have made up my own mind.
I can defeat an army of Rinches or the men of the Jericho, but I cannot stand against a determined woman.
And Farley is my friend. You will not hold him any longer.
You may all stay or you may all go. I wash my hands.
Andy spent two uneasy days until the two women were certain Tony would recover. They gave up hope that he would consent to leave his uncle and return home with them.
He's probably safer here anyway, south of the river. Jericho might try for him again if Tony was at our place.
Juana and Teresa had said their goodbyes to Tony. Big Jim stood behind them, sadness in his eyes. Tony had spoken to him but little, and only in a formal, standoffish manner. He pointedly avoided addressing him, either by name or by any version of the word father.
That boy needs a good whipping with a wet rope.
He just ain't finished growing up yet. Maybe he'll get better.
If he don't get himself killed before that. I'll say this for him, though. He'd poke a bear in the eye with a willow switch and then try to skin him.
Teresa hugged her brother.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back to see you real soon, Tony.
She looked hopefully at Farley.
You're coming with us, aren't you? You and Andy?
If you want us to.
I do.
Chavez had sent an escort of vaqueros along to see the McCauley party safely to the river. None of the Chavez men would have dared molest them, but the region was infested by bandits over whom Chavez had no control. Several of McCauley's cowboys had camped on the north bank, waiting for their employer's return. They would pick up the escort duty. Andy and Farley were not really needed, but they had nowhere else in particular to go.
You know how close we came to getting buried on this place?
McCauley saved our bacon. Them and Tony.
Farley stole a glance at Teresa.
I swear that little girl gets to looking pretty all the time. Only she wasn't half Mexican.
If it was me, I wouldn't let that make any difference.
It oughtn't to, but it does.
The procession crossed at a shallow ford. Chavez had sent a messenger to alert the McCauley crew, so the cowboys were waiting as the buggy and the horsemen pulled up out of the water. Andy saw that the reception committee was more than the McCauley cowboys. Sergeant Donahue was there with several of his rangers, including Hewitt. He touched the brim of his hat in deference to the women, then looked at Big Jim.
From what folks say about you and Lupe Chavez, I wasn't sure you'd come back alive.
Folks say a lot of things that aren't true, Sergeant. Lupe and I are kinfolks. Sort of.
Some of the worst fights I ever saw was between kinfolks.
Donahue turned a stern face toward Andy and Farley.
Don't you two know that you had no legal right to go into Mexico?
That was when we were Rangers, but we're citizens now. You fired us.
I sometimes say things in the heat of the moment that I don't mean.
You hiring us back?
I never took you from the rolls. Company's too far under strength.
Maybe you could see clear to give us a raise in pay.
The pay scale is set by the state. I have nothing to do with it.
It was worth a try. What say, Badger boy? Want to give the Rangers another chance?
I don't see where I've got anything better to do.
Jericho Jackson brushed away the marks of the saddle from his favorite gray horse as it cooled down from the afternoon's riding. Working with his hands helped him relieve some of his tension.
I don't know what's become of that old man Gonzalez. I'd sure like him to tell me what's going on down at Chavez's.
He probably took himself up to Laredo and got drunk. You know these Mexicans put a little money in their pocket. You won't see them again till they drink it all up. Takes 20 of them chili pickers to make a dozen.
I'd give $1,000 to know what Chavez is up to.
For $1,000, I'd go down there and ask him.
Even if you got close enough to listen, you couldn't savvy what they said. I can't help feeling like that damn bandit is plotting some kind of strike against me. He's bound to have figured out that we laid a trap for him with that herd of cattle. We'll be aching to square up.
Too bad we missed getting that nephew of his. At least we bloodied him up a little.
All the more reason to wonder what Chavez may do next. I can't afford to leave here right now.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, that good woman of mine is still grieving over her nephew. I've been thinking about taking her back to Missouri. Spend some time amongst her kin. Maybe the change would ease her mind and set her to dwelling on other things.
Jericho was about the strongest man Hatton had ever known. But he had one outstanding weakness in Hatton's view. He was excessively devoted to his wife. As unyielding as he might be to the men around him, he seemed almost subservient to her. Hatton had been married once when he was young and foolish. He had left that nagging woman years ago, never looked back. He couldn't understand why Jericho bent backward to please his wife. He knew that Jericho's fixation on avenging his nephew was prompted by his wife's grief, even more than any of his own. Because of it, several Jericho men had died, and more might yet do so. Hatton would like to stop it, but he was boxed in. It might cost his life if he told Jericho who had really killed his nephew. He was not prepared to die for anybody, man or woman.
I've about made up my mind to hit Chavez before he can hit me again. I'll gather me a bunch of bold men, cross the river, wipe out that Chavez outfit for good and all.
McNally tried that once, found himself up against a whole company of Mexican soldiers, come within an inch of getting slaughtered.
Because he hit the wrong ranch and lost the element of surprise. By the time he got to where he meant to go in the first place, they were ready and waiting for him. The way to handle Chavez would be to hit fast, hit hard, and leave nobody standing.
Hatton did not relish being caught up in any such reckless venture. If need be, he could get along without Jericho. He'd been skimming off some of the proceeds from cattle he'd driven north for Jericho. He had a secret account salted away in the San Antonio Bank. It would see him to a new life in some distant place beyond Jericho's reach.
When you figuring on doing all this?
I don't see any reason to wait. Send out the word. We're hiring fighting men.
Some of them will get themselves killed.
We don't have to pay the ones that don't come back.
Andy was trying to decide if he'd made a mistake, remaining a ranger. Sergeant Donahue's attitude toward him seemed no better than before. He realized he would not have been retained had Donahue not been too short-handed to patrol the river properly. He had sent Andy the farthest of all the rangers, way upriver from the base camp. Given a pack mule to carry supplies, he had set up his own rude camp west of Lantana's appointed area of responsibility. Every second day, he rode east until he encountered Len, then turned back to the west. His assignment was to watch for sign of any major movements across the river in either direction. So far, he had seen none. After a time, he was just going through the motions, riding his appointed circuit as ordered, but expecting to find nothing. One day, as he paused at the river's edge to let his black horse drink, he saw two men approaching from the east. One riding, one walking, and leading a horse that limped. He took them for local Mexicans until they came close enough that he could see they were Americans. One tall, one short. The tall one on horseback raised a hand in greeting. His round, sunburned face looked genial. Andy responded in kind.
Hell of a thing, having a horse come up lame way out in this nowhere country. My partner's getting foot sore.
The shorter man was limping about as badly as his horse. His weary face was lined in misery.
We've been looking for somebody who might make a trade with us. A good horse for a lame one.
Might be hard to come by without you willing to pay some boot.
The walker rubbed a dusty sleeve across his face and blinked the sting of sweat from his eyes. He had a scraggly beard of uncertain color, longer in some places than in others, like a garden with a spotty crop.
You know Jericho Jackson?
I've met the gentleman.
Maybe you can tell us where his place is at. We're thinking we've come too far up the river.
Andy gave both men a long study. He saw nothing in their appearance that would brand them as criminals. Their clothing was dusty and worn, holes unpatched at the knees. They looked like any number of working trail hands he'd seen. Everything about them bespoke short rations and low pay. But he had to distrust anyone looking for Jericho.
You've come farther than you had to. From here, you travel north and bear a bit to the east.
How will we know when we're on his land?
Well, you won't have to find him. He'll find you, or his men will.
Sounds like who we've been looking for. Gonna be hard to get there with a lame horse, though. I don't suppose you'd like to swap.
I don't suppose I would.
You said we might need some boot. How's this?
Andy hardly saw the movement, but the rider had a pistol in his hand.
Now, about that swap. We like it to be friendly. Before you get off, let's see you drop that six-shooter. Be real careful, or you could get a couple of holes in you that the good Lord didn't put there.
Andy considered warning them that he was a ranger, but thought better of it. The two might decide to take no chances with him if they knew. It would be easy to murder him and drag his body into the brush, where it might not be found for months, if at all. He eased the pistol from its holster and let it fall. The rifle was still in its scabbard, but he knew he had no chance to draw it. He dismounted and stepped away from the horse, but held on to the reins.
Not a good trade unless both parties are willing.
Me and Devlin are willing. I reckon two out of three ought to be enough.
The limping man removed the saddles from both horses and put his on Andy's mount. He then took Andy's rifle and scabbard.
I wouldn't want you to back out of the deal and shoot us with the Winchester. Me and Barstow will cut cards later and see who gets it.
No hard feelings, I hope. At least we're leaving you your saddle and a horse to put it on. I hope you won't abuse him. He's getting some age on him, but that ankle will heal if you give it time.
The two men rode off to the north. He turned to examine the brown horse. He saw nothing special in its conformation to mark it as anything except a working ranch horse. The lameness was in the right leg. He lifted it, hoping the cause might be nothing more than a stone caught in a shoe. There was no stone. There was no shoe. The ankle appeared swollen.
Looks like I'm not going to ride you anywhere.
He led the horse to the edge of the river to see if it would drink. He was a couple of miles from his campsite. He'd left the pack mule there, staked on a long rope to allow it to graze. He considered the mule, but it wasn't broken to ride. It would probably balk and refuse to move if he tried to get on it. Or else it would throw him off and kick him hard enough to break his ribs. Perhaps when Andy didn't meet Len at their usual rendezvous site, he would come looking. Then again, he might decide Andy was simply late and get tired of waiting. Andy guessed that the sun was only a couple of hours short of setting. Chances were that the two horse thieves would stop and camp at dark, figuring they were safe. They might not appreciate how fast a determined man could walk. They had not stripped his saddle of anything except a rifle, so he had his canteen and a chunk of bacon he had roasted but not finished at noon. He followed the tracks. The thieves had taken the northeasterly direction he suggested. He was soon sweating. A southerly breeze found its way through his shirt and cooled him. At intervals, he came across grazing cattle. Some shied away. Others, not used to seeing a man on foot, approached him out of curiosity. A few even trotted alongside for short distances before they lost interest, or he scared them off with a shout and a wave of his hat. A coyote loped off 100 yards, then turned to watch him. He had heard it said that coyotes could tell whether a man carried a firearm or not. He didn't believe that, but he respected the Indian view of the coyote as trickster, a mischievous spirit always ready to foil the designs of men. He had stopped for short periods of rest, but impatience prodded him back to his feet. He wanted to go as far as possible before darkness. Though he intended to keep traveling after nightfall, following the tracks would be more difficult, almost impossible. Then he would have to depend on his sense of direction. The two seemed to be traveling as straight a line as the uneven terrain allowed. The stars indicated that it was somewhere around midnight when he spotted the faint glow of a dying campfire a little west of his line of travel. He indulged a moment in self-congratulation for managing to stay so close to the trail after darkness made him give up looking for it. He hoped to catch the two asleep. He didn't want to confront them in daylight with no weapon better than a mesquite club. He moved carefully toward the glow, listening for any sound that might indicate someone was still awake. He almost stumbled into the two horses. Andy sank to his knees and waited for a reaction from the sleeping men. He heard nothing. He found the saddles. One of the thieves had buckled Andy's scabbard to his own rig. He quietly slid the rifle free. He tried not to look into the remnant of the fire because it compromised his vision in the darkness. He located the two men, both wrapped in their blankets, asleep. He saw a gun belt rolled up and lying by one man's head. Gingerly, he drew the pistol from it and stuck it in his own holster, which the thieves had not bothered to take. He moved to the side of the other man. He too had a pistol in a belt and a second lying by his head. Andy assumed that was his own. He retrieved both and retreated to the smoldering fire. To one side of it, he found a can in which the men had boiled coffee. Some of it remained, but it was cold. He set the can on the coals to reheat it. He could have awakened the men then, but he preferred not to take a chance on them in the dark. He instead sat on the ground and waited for daylight. They might have been trail hands, but if so, they'd given up the drover's habit of rising before dawn. The sun was breaking free when Barstow opened his eyes. He stretched his arms, then became aware of Andy sitting there watching him. He froze.
Sleeping kind of late, aren't you? I heard a rooster crow somewhere an hour ago.
Devlin flung his blanket aside and grabbed for his six-shooter. He came up with an empty holster. Andy waved a pistol at him.
It's over here.
Both men stared at him in shock. Barstow slowly raised his hands. Devlin followed, his jaw sagging.
Told you we ought to have taken turns staying to watch last night.
Mister, I didn't believe you'd be so mean as to follow us on a lame horse.
I didn't. I walked.
Walked?
I get the notion you two ain't been at this outlaw business long. You're not very good at it.
We got awful tired of herding cattle for beans and bacon. We thought there must be an easier way to make a living. We heard Jericho Jackson was looking for men who can handle theirselves and that he pays good.
Whoever told you that should have also told you life can be short over at Jericho's. He's bad about getting men killed.
Couldn't be any more dangerous than swimming cattle over a river when it's running high.
With Jericho, you're liable to be crossing stolen cattle over the Rio Grande with a bunch of mad Mexicans grabbing at your shirt tails. But I'm saving you from that. I'm putting you under arrest.
Arrest?
I forgot to tell you. I'm a ranger.
Devlin, damned if you ain't fooled around and got us in trouble again. It's easy, you said. Just swap horses, you said. If you hadn't been careless, you never would have got yours lame in the first place.
I couldn't help it. I didn't know he's so clumsy. He looked pretty good in the dark.
I'm taking mine back. Y'all can switch around, one walking and one riding.
But I got blisters on my feet.
The wages of sin. Y'all get busy and fix us some breakfast. No use in starting out on an empty stomach.
Barstow trudged along, starting to sweat, though the morning was only moderately warm.
Ranger, we ain't really done anybody harm. You got your horse back. We ain't robbed no bank or nothing. Can't you see your way clear to just cut us loose? We'll take up our old jobs, driving cattle, and go to church every chance we get.
I know an old preacher man named Webb. He says that the church house is half empty as long as everything goes along smooth. But when there's trouble, people start coming to meeting. You two were all set to join Jericho's bunch of renegades. Now you're ready to sing in the choir.
We've been drinking. Oh, we're sober now, and things look different.
Yeah, This time I'm holding the gun.
I hear tell that the penitentiary is already overcrowded. I'd hate for us to make it worse.
It'll be up to a judge and jury to decide about that.
Think how much a trial will cost the taxpayers.
Be glad it was me that caught you. Some rangers wouldn't have bothered with a trial. Bullets come cheaper than lawyers.
Andy saw three horsemen approaching in a slow lope. He couldn't tell immediately whether they were Texan or Mexican, but instinct told him they were trouble. He drew his pistol and laid it across his lap.
I hope them ain't some of your quick-trigger rangers.
We're your prisoners! You gotta protect us!
They're not rangers. At least none that I know. I'll bet they're Jericho hands.
Who are you people? Don't you know you're on Jericho's road?
It wasn't much of a road. It was more like a cow trail. Andy sized up the three and quickly decided they were not the kind he would lend money to. Like Andy, the leader held a pistol in his lap. The other two gripped rifles.
I'm Andy Pickard. I'm a ranger. These men are my prisoners.
I'm Orville Mapes, and your name don't mean a thing to me. Now, these men ain't part of Jericho's outfit. What'd they do?
They stole a horse. Mine.
We was on our way to see Mr. Jericho Jackson about a job.
And you stole a ranger's horse? Well, Jericho ain't gonna figure you're real smart.
We didn't know he was a ranger.
If we had, we'd have shot him right off.
Ranger or not, you've got no authority on Jericho's land without he gives you permission.
Rangers don't have to ask for anybody's permission. They can go anywhere they decide to.
Not on Jericho's property. I think you better hand me that six-shooter.
Andy knew he could not shoot his way out with three men at close range. He'd be dead before the echo faded. He gave up the pistol and his rifle.
What about us? You're gonna turn us loose, ain't you?
I'm taking you to Jericho. He'll decide what to do with you.
He's just the man we wanted to see.
Yeah, maybe. Then again, there's people who've seen him and wish they hadn't.
Mapes jerked his head at Andy.
You all seem to be short a horse. I don't suppose you'd object to this man riding double with you.
Andy saw no point in replying. He took his left foot out of the stirrup to allow Barstow to swing into position behind the saddle. At first, Andy was surprised to see that Jericho's headquarters looked much like those of Lupe Chavez and Big Jim McCauley. On reflection, he recalled that all had been built at about the same time and by the same people, the forebears of Don Cipriano Chavez. Designed for defense against hostile Indians, Jericho's place would still be a formidable fortress. Andy would not like to have to lead a charge against it. Mapes pointed them toward an adobe barn backed by an extensive layout of corrals, much like Big Jim's.
We all wait out here till Jericho sees fit to come and look you over.
Why not take him up to the main house instead of troubling Jericho to come to the barn?
Nobody goes up to the main house unless it's with Jericho say so. He doesn't like his missus seeing the kind of man he associates with.
You mean us?
If you was married to a pretty little woman from Kansas City, you wouldn't want her putting up with this grimy bunch.
What happens to us?
Who knows? He may decide to hire you, or he may decide to shoot you. With him, you never know.
Maybe we ought to have written him a letter before we came.
Mapes herded Andy and the two thieves into the barn.
You all are just as well set. I'll go up and tell Jericho you're here. He'll get around to you in his own good time.
Andy sat on the dirt floor. Mapes had left his two helpers to watch. One leaned against a saddle rack holding his pistol. The other dropped himself against the door jamb and aimed his rifle casually at supposed targets outside. Andy compared their faces with those of Barstow and Devlin. They had a hard-bitten, determined look. They might at one time have been working cowhands, but now they fitted Andy's conception of hired pistoleros who would commit any crime if the pay was right.
Barstow, think you all got it in you to qualify for a bunch like that?
Barstow seemed too troubled to answer. Devlin stared apprehensively at the two Jericho men.
You're the one that needs to worry, Ranger. I doubt as they've got any patience for lawmen here. They're liable to cut off your ears and send them to Austin.
Shut up, Devlin. You may give them ideas about what to do with me and you.
Jericho seemed in no hurry to see his visitors. Andy waited in the barn for more than an hour before he saw a shadow fall across the threshold. Jericho's broad shoulders almost blocked the door. He walked halfway across the room and waited while his eyes adjusted to the poor light. Andy and the two thieves stood up. Jericho looked first at Barstow and Devlin, then at Andy. His eyes brightened with recognition.
I've already made your acquaintance, Ranger. You had that boy Antonio. I wanted him, but you wouldn't let me have him.
It's against Ranger policy to hand a prisoner over for lynching.
I wasn't going to lynch him. He'd have gotten a fair trial. We have our own court to try thieves and killers and trespassers.
A kangaroo court?
Nobody's ever appealed a ruling.
Maybe they haven't lived long enough.
Don't be trying my patience. I don't have enough of it to waste.
They say you're running a haven here for men in trouble with the law.
Call it a sanctuary. The Mexicans hit somebody, then run to sanctuary on the other side of the river. You Rangers can't touch them there. I say if it works for them, it ought to work for me. I'm running a sanctuary of my own here. I don't want the Rangers messing with it.
But you're in Texas. Lupe Chavez ain't.
I'll say this for you, Ranger. You've got guts to come on my ranch and try to lecture me like that.
I'm just saying what I think.
And most men in your place would have let me have that kid. Was you really prepared to die protecting him?
I don't know. I never had to make that decision. Big Jim McCauley came along just in time.
Big Jim. You know, me and him used to be friends a long time ago, before he fell in with the Mexicans.
But you still wanted to kill his son.
Stepson. The boy ain't of his blood.
Jericho turned to Barstow and Devlin.
What about you two? What's your excuse for trespassing where you wasn't asked?
Me and Barstow came here hoping we could work for you. We ain't got no truck with the Rangers.
Work for me? What could you do?
We stole the Rangers' horse.
And got caught. Damn little recommendation.
We learn easy. Just tell us what to do and we'll do it.
Mapes, take these two to Bert Hatton. If he can find a use for them, they can stay. If he can't... As for you, I've never been friends with the Rangers, but maybe it's time I tried to be. I can see where they might be of some use to me.
It's our job to enforce the law. We're not supposed to play favorites.
I'd just ask you to lean a little in my direction in case a dispute was to come up. Most of my trouble has been with Mexican border jumpers, so that oughtn't to be hard for you to do. They're illegal anyway, the minute they set foot on the Texas side of the river.
Now, I'm just a private. Even the camp cook doesn't ask my opinion about anything.
What's your name, Ranger?
Andy Pickard.
I don't suppose you're a married man, Pickard.
I haven't had time for such as that.
Any prospects?
Maybe, if I was to ask her. But it wouldn't be much of a life for her, being married to a ranger who's always moving around from one camp to another.
You'll get tired of that sooner or later. Every man ought to get married. Having a wife gives you something to come home for instead of spending all your time with the likes of the men you've seen around here. Having a good woman can be the salvation of a man. I'd have you come down and meet mine, but she's not in a mood for company right now. She never could have any children herself, so she took her nephew under her wing after her sister died. Some of the Chavez gang killed him a while back.
Sorry.
I've had to watch that good woman grieve herself half to death. That's why I wanted to get my hands on Chavez's nephew. I want Lupe to know how it feels.
Would it make your wife feel better to know Tony's mother was grieving the same way she does?
I'd feel better. Blood for blood, an eye for an eye.
Is that why you're so dead set against Mexicans?
My feeling about Mexicans goes back a lot further than that. Goes all the way back to when Texas fought for independence from Mexico.
You're not old enough to have been in that fight.
I'm old enough to remember it, though. I remember seeing my daddy take his rifle down from over the mantle and ride off to join the rebellion. Mexican soldiers caught him, stood him against a wall, shot him down like a dog. My mother put me on a mule, and we started running for the Louisiana border to get away from Santa Anna's army. It was rainy and cold. We bogged in mud plumb to our knees. She'd taken pneumonia, died. Left me all by myself, just a shirt-tailed youngin'. Damn near starved to death before I learned to take whatever I needed, however I had to. Lie, steal, whatever it took. I've been at war against Mexicans ever since. I suppose you've got an old mother somewhere, putting a lamp in the window every night, waiting for you to come home.
Indians killed my mother. I was so little I can't hardly remember.
Too bad. I still remember mine, 20 times a day. My wife looks a lot like her. I suppose you're anxious to get back to your company.
I was figuring to turn in those two horse thieves, but I guess you're going to keep them and put them to work.
I'll leave that up to my foreman, Bert Hatton. He'll escort you off my ranch.
I can find my own way.
He'll see to it that nobody gives you any trouble. He'll have your horse waiting for you at the corner corral. And you tell your fellow rangers that if I ever want any of you on my place again, I'll send for you.
Sergeant Donahue will appreciate hearing that.
Jericho went out the door. Andy followed. After being in the dark barn so long, the bright sun hurt his eyes. When his vision cleared, he saw three men and four horses at the corner corral. Two of them were Barstow and Devlin. Andy did not recognize the third until he reached the gate. Jericho had disappeared.
I know you.
And I know you.
This was the man who had led the nighttime attack on Andy, Len, and Farley as they rode south from San Antonio to join the ranger company on the river.
The night you all tried to hit us, we suspected you belonged to Jericho's outfit. We heard somebody holler like he was shot. Was he?
Get on your horse. We're taking you away from here.
I can go by myself.
Jericho wants to be sure you're gone. You can go peaceful, or we can tie you in the saddle.
He poked the muzzle of a pistol in Andy's direction for emphasis.
I believe that six-shooter's mine.
You'll get it when I'm ready, or you'll get what's in it.
Devlin was holding a paint horse with a huge Mexican brand across most of its left hip.
Devlin, looks like they gave you a new saddle and a horse to put under it.
He ain't as good as your black. I'm thinking about another swap.
You'd have to shoot me first.
I've been thinking about that, too.
Come on, I got other things to do.
They had ridden for about an hour in the general direction of the Ranger Company's camp. Andy doubted that Hatton intended to go all the way there. He simply wanted to be sure Andy got off to a good start. Hatton pointed to a thicket of mesquite and catclaw.
Over there.
Andy saw no sense in riding into a thicket, but he looked into the muzzle of Hatton's pistol and decided against asking questions. Hatton reined up just at the edge of the thicket.
Barstow, Devlin, Jericho left it up to me to decide if you boys have got a job. You want it bad enough to earn it?
Just tell us what to do.
I want you to prove yourselves. I want you to shoot this ranger.
Oh, you mean kill him?
Here now.
I ain't never shot a man. I can't do it in cold blood.
I figured you two for counterfeit as soon as I saw you. You shoot him, or I'll shoot all three of you. You'll make a good meal for those javelinas.
Hands trembling, Devlin drew his pistol.
Steady down. You're as liable to hit your horse as hit that ranger.
Devlin held the pistol in both hands. It continued to waver.
I told Jericho that neither one of you is worth the rope it'd take to hang you with.
Barstow bent down and came up with a rifle.
I reckon we rate a little higher than that.
He swung the muzzle toward Andy. Andy's mouth felt as if it were full of cotton. Barstow moved the rifle a little farther. It pointed at Hatton.
What are you doing?
Never kill a ranger. If you do, the rest of them will come after you. They never forget, and they won't give up till you're hanging off a tree limb or shot full of holes.
I'll have your heads on a pike.
For God's sake, Barstow!
Andy took advantage of the moment to push his horse forward and grab Hatton's pistol with both hands. They wrestled, and Andy managed to twist the weapon free. Hatton wheeled his horse around and spurred away, bent low over the horn of the saddle to present a poor target.
You spilt it now, Barstow! We'll never get a job with Jericho!
It's a damn poor job. It says you gotta kill somebody in cold blood. And him looking at you the whole time? There ain't enough money between here and San Antonio.
Thanks, Barstow. For a minute, I felt like an angel landed on my shoulder.
If there's any angels around here, they're lost. I was afraid Jericho wouldn't hire us. But I didn't expect he'd send his foreman out here to kill us.
I believe Hatton did that on his own.
Killing Andy would have eliminated one witness to the attack on him, Len, and Farley.
And even if you had shot me, he'd have killed both of you and left us all lying here for the hogs. Dead men don't testify.
Barstow removed his hat and rubbed his sleeve over a face dripping with sweat.
Working cattle gets to looking better all the time. Maybe we can get our old jobs back. You gonna turn us in for stealing your horse?
I would have, but you saved my life. I owe you a chance to get yours straightened out.
Me and Devlin was just looking for a little more excitement than we've been having. I think we've had enough of it to last us a long time.
If I was you all, I'd take a wide swing around Jericho's country, then head north. Way north.
That's what we'll do. And if I ever get arrested again, it'll be for singing too loud in church.
Andy watched them ride off in an easterly direction. Then he turned southward. Bert Hatton entered the outside door to the room Jericho used as an office. He was seldom asked into the main part of the house. Jericho was strict about insulating his wife from the ranch help. Hatton's shirt was torn. A long red scratch marred his cheek. Jericho looked up from his ledger book.
What happened to you?
Mind if I get me a drink?
Jericho nodded and Hatton went to a cabinet where he knew the whiskey was kept. He poured a small glass, half full.
Horse cold-jawed on me. Ran through the brush.
Jericho often had a feeling that Hatton said only what he thought his boss wanted to hear. But the story was plausible enough. No man worth his salt worked in the brush country without taking scars and getting thorns embedded in his hide.
Did you set the ranger safely on his way?
Last I seen of him, he was headed south.
Good. I'd like to have a friend or two in the ranger camp when the bullets fly again.
I don't think you better count on him for a friend. We oughtn't to have let him get off this place alive. We'll have trouble with him yet.
Dead rangers are bad for business. What about them two cowhands? Did you put them to work?
I set them on their way. They didn't have enough sand in their craw for our kind of business.
Too bad. We'll need all the help we can get when we make our big push on Lupe Chavez.
And when's that to be?
I don't know yet, but it'll come. It'll be the Battle of the Alamo all over again. Only this time, it'll end different.
Maybe we ought to leave Chavez alone. You got more land already than you can rightly see after. What do you want with land in Mexico?
This is about more than land. It's an old fight that never got settled. And there's the business about my wife's nephew. Lupe's got to pay for that.
Maybe I was wrong about them Mexican outlaws that killed him. Maybe they wasn't Lupe's men after all.
You scared, Bert?
Not scared. Just thinking about the men that might get killed.
They're being well paid for it.
There's some things money ain't enough for.
Money can buy anything. You just have to be willing to pay the price.
Len Tanner was at Andy's makeshift campsite when Andy rode in.
Where you been? I found your saddle where you left it. I'm worried that some Mexican bandits might have drug you off and cut out your gizzard.
I've been up to Jericho's.
What in the hell for?
Getting another saddle.
He waited for Len's puzzled expression to come to full flower.
A couple of horse thieves thought they could take my horse there. Seems I got back what was mine, and some.
It's a wonder Jericho didn't shoot you.
Funny thing is that I got along right decent with him. He wasn't what I expected. I never once saw him breathe fire.
He never saw no halo around his head neither. He's a bad hombre.
So everybody says. It's odd, but he reminded me of Lupe Chavez. Neither one of them has any idea how much they think alike. They just look at things from opposite sides of the river.
They'd both cut your throat in a minute. But right now, you better report to Sergeant Donahue before he cuts your throat. He's suspicions that you swum the river to join up with Lupe Chavez.
What would make him think that?
You took up for that boy Tony. You helped him to get back to his uncle.
I'd have done that for a lost pup. And I did it for the McCauleys, not for Lupe Chavez.
Donahue ain't going to see the difference. As far as he's concerned, they're all Mexicans. Even Big Jim.
I'll go downriver and report to him. First, though, I'm hungry. Want to help me scare up some wood for a fire?
They rode down the river past Len's camp. Halfway to the next ranger's post, they came upon Sergeant Donahue riding the line.
Here's your stray, Sergeant.
Donahue gave Andy a look that, for a culprit, would mean 5 years in prison.
Absent without leave. What's your excuse, Private Pickard?
It wasn't by my choice. My horse was stolen by thieves going to Jericho's. I got it back, but then we were met along the way and escorted over to have a talk with Jericho at his headquarters.
I've never seen Jericho's headquarters. Not many rangers have ever been there.
It looks a lot like the McCauley Ranch and Lupe Chavez's.
I've never seen Chavez's either, but I'd sure like an excuse to go there and give them Mexicans a good whipping the way McNally did. By the way, what about them two horse thieves?
Last I saw them, they were heading in the direction of Canada.
Should have pulled the trigger on them. Nothing cures a thief better than a .45 slug.
I figured on bringing them in as prisoners.
Chances are 50-50 that some judge would turn them loose. They go right back to what they were doing. Death is pretty damn permanent.
I'll try to remember that.
Now, since your going was not voluntary, I'll reconsider filing charges. But consider yourself on probation.
Any word on when Lieutenant Buckaloo will be back?
None. I think they may have found something else for him to do. I'm looking to be advanced to lieutenant any time now. Maybe even captain.
That'd be nice.
Go back to patrolling your section of the river. I expect you're out of supplies.
Pretty near.
I'll send a pack mule out tomorrow with coffee, sugar, and salt. As for meat, I see a lot of cattle and hogs running loose.
They all belong to somebody.
Meskins. If they holler, tell them this is a tax they owe us for keeping them safe.
Andy considered the irony. These people along the river were subject not only to banditry from both sides, but to harassment by those rangers who considered every Mexican suspect. The few American settlers were not much better, for they were particular targets of Mexican outlaws still trying to avenge Santa Ana's defeat. At times, Andy thought seriously about giving this part of Texas back to the horned toads, the scorpions, and the sharp-toothed javelinas. They had a prior claim. Andy proceeded upriver. He had found the lame horse contentedly grazing in the river's grassy floodplain. The limp was less pronounced. Andy tossed a loop around the animal's neck and led him to his makeshift camp. He found his saddle hanging from a tree limb so wild animals wouldn't gnaw on it. Lens work, he guessed. Now Andy had two horses and two saddles. He was coming up in the world. A trail led northward from this shallow crossing. Andy saw a procession coming from the north. He counted four men on horseback. A buggy trailed behind, carrying two women. As it came closer, he saw that they were Juana and Teresa McCauley. One of the horsemen was Big Jim. The others were some of his cowboys. Andy rode out to meet them. The riders drew guns, then put them away as they recognized him. He suspected he knew their mission before they told him.
And down to see Tony?
We haven't heard a thing about him since we were down here the last time. The women folks are worried.
I always figured if it's bad news, you'll hear about it soon enough. Since I haven't heard anything, I'll bet Tony's all right.
You look thin, Andy.
Eating my own fixings, ma'am. Nobody would ever hire me as a cook.
If you'll come up and spend a few days with us, we'll put some weight back on you.
It'd please me, ma'am, but I don't see as I can.
Have you seen Farley, Andy?
Now and again. He's closer to the main camp, so he slips down there and gets himself a decent meal when he knows the sergeant ain't around.
It isn't far from here to my brother Lupe's ranch. He knows you now, so you could go over there when you are hungry.
He might not like having a ranger show up. Anyway, it's illegal for me to cross the river.
It's too bad people have to draw boundaries. There was a time when the river made no difference.
The trail's been unusually quiet, Andy. I've heard that Jericho's been hiring a lot of men, but we didn't run into any. Not them or hardly anybody else. Makes me wonder.
I had a visit with him. Maybe he's reformed.
I wish I could believe that, but I know him too well. He has a hunger that can't be satisfied. Most people get drunk on whiskey. He gets drunk on acquisition.